you a bit.
You run this morning?
Will the House please come to order? Will the members please show their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may take final roll.
38 members present.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, no one is excused from the call today.
The prayer today is by Father James Cronin of the Cathedral of the Nativity. Members, please rise for the prayer.
Let us bow our heads and ask for God's blessing. Heavenly Father, we join our governor today, pausing to remember by our prayers to you our brothers who lost their lives in Iran, trying to aid our brothers and sisters held hostage. We ask your loving mercy and kindness upon their souls. We ask also that you look with kindness upon the families of each of these young men who now suffer the loss of a husband, a father, or a son. Bring peace to this disturbed world, making us realize that we are all brothers and sisters, and by your command that we are destined to love one another. Let this peace begin with each and every one of us. Amen.
Representative Rogers.
I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread on the journal.
There's no objection. The prayer will be spread in the journal. The Chief Clerk, please certify as the correctness of the previous day's journal.
As Chief Clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 109th day and House Supplement number 59.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House approve the journal for the 109th day and House Supplement number 59 as certified by the Chief Clerk.
There's no objection. The journal and journal supplement will stand approved. The guest for introduction to the House this morning, Representative Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, you and I have a group of constituents in the audience this morning in Gallery B, and I will introduce them and ask them to stand and ask you to hold the applause till I finish the introduction. From the Howard Valentine School in Kaufman Cove, through the 5th through 12th grade, Michael Moore, Jane Morehouse, Shade Starr, Kim Hampton, Virginia Campbell, Ryan Rossing, Mike Michelle Taman, Stormy Hamer, Rod Rossing, Heidi Taman, Jess Starr, Tom Valentine, Keith Wolf, Susie Schmidt, Junior Schmidt, Leona Wilkes, and two of their teachers, Al Downing and Sue Bowling, and one parent, Donna Lee Campbell.
Representative Haugen. Representative Branson.
Mr. Speaker, I hate to dispute Representative Haugen, but the Cordova swim team, which is here today, is going to take home all the blue ribbons. They're here for the Juno meter meet, which starts this evening and runs through Sunday. And there are 20 swimmers from Cordova. Those in the House today are Chad Lamb, Sherry Knapp, Billy McCullough, Grace Treffers, Angus Mullins, Andy Fridgen, Ben Mullins, Skip Songer, Richard Miller, Debbie McCullough, Amber Cutter, and their chaperones are Chris Durlap and Nancy Bird.
Further guests for introduction. Messages from the governor.
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Parr.
I have a brief at ease, Mr.
House Police Entities. Please come back to order. Messages from the governor.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, the Senate has passed committee substitute for House Bill number 452 rules, credit unions effective date, with the following amendment. Page 18, lines 15 through 22, delete entirely section 64540. And so CSHB 452 rules amended Senate is transmitted for consideration. This has been duplicated and placed on each member's desk. The Senate has passed House Bill number 930 relating to number of Superior Court judges effective date, with the following amendment. This one also has been duplicated and placed on each member's desk. And so HB 930 amended Senate is transmitted for consideration. The Senate has passed the following, and it is transmitted for consideration. Senate Bill number 569 amended by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to the State Commission for Human Rights.
Judiciary.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Communications.
No, Mr. Speaker.
Reports to standing committees.
The Committee on Resources has had Senate Joint Resolution number 60 requesting the U.S. Department of Agriculture to establish a plant quarantine center under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Miles, Chairman, concurred in by Miles, Osterbach, Chatterton, Carney, Cotton, Fuller, and Jaroff. Senate Joint Resolution number 60 has no further referral. The Committee on Resources has had House Concurrent Resolution number 69 requesting the Alaska Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission to investigate the possibility of creating a separate administrative area for the Aleutian Islands, and requesting the Department of Fish and Game to provide the legislature with data and statistics relating to salmon harvests in the Aleutian Islands under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Osterbach, Chairman, concurred in by Jaroff, Fuller, Carney, Cotton, Chatterton, and Osterbach. Miles has no recommendation. House Concurrent Resolution number 69 has no further referral. The Committee on Hess has set House Bill 125 relating to multipurpose youth centers under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 125 and reports it back with individual recommendations. The report was signed by Mrs. Buchholz, Chairman, signing do pass, Chatterton, Hurlburt, Buchholz. Signing no recommendation, Byrne. House Bill 125 has a further referral to Finance. The Committee on Judiciary has had House Bill 454 relating to the regulation of pricing of alcoholic beverages under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 454 and recommends it do pass. A physical note will follow. The report was signed by Mr. Parr, Chairman, signing do pass, Phillips, Martin, O'Connell, Anderson, and Parr. House Bill 454 has no further referral. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 529 relating to fish disease control under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with Resources Committee substitute for House Bill 529 and recommends it do pass and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by Mr. Freeman, Vice Chairman, concurred in by Montgomery, Guy, Freeman, Duncan, McKinnon, and Haugen. Having no recommendation, Moss, Smith, and Rogers. House Bill 529 has no further referral. The Committee on Resources has had sponsor substitute for House Bill 557 relating to scheduling oil and gas lease sales under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Bill 557 and recommends that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Miles, Chairman, concurred in by Osterbach, Chatterton, Carney, Jaroff, and Miles. Sponsor substitute for House Bill 557 has a further referral to Finance. The Committee on Hess has had House Bill 637 relating to the purchase of services by the state for persons under its responsibility under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 637 and recommends it do pass and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by Mrs. Buchholz, Chairman, signing do pass, Chatterton, Barnes, Buchholz, and Byrne. Signing no recommendation, Hurlburt. House Bill 637 has a further referral to Finance. The Committee on Resources has had House Bill 653 relating to bulk fuel under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 653 and recommends it do pass and attaches a letter of intent and new fiscal notes, and recommends that it be referred to the Finance Committee. The report was signed by Mr. Miles, Chairman, concurred in by Miles, Osterbach, Cotton, Fuller, Jaroff, Eliason, and Carney. Having no recommendation, Halford. House Bill 653 has a further referral to Finance. The Committee on Resources has had House Bill 724, authorizing the Division of Power and Energy Development, under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Miles, Chairman, concurred in by Miles, Osterbach, Chatterton, Carney, Cotton, Fuller, and Jaroff. House Bill 724 has a further referral to Finance. The Committee on Resources has had House Bill 725, a special appropriation to the Division of Energy and Power Development for the construction of a photovoltaic demonstration project, under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Miles, Chairman, concurred in by Miles, Osterbach, Chatterton, Carney, Fuller, and Jaroff. Cotton has no recommendation. House Bill 725 has a further referral to Finance. The Committee on Resources has had sponsor substitute for House Bill 800, unitization of oil and gas leases to oil and gas conservation and to reports of oil and gas under state lease, under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Bill 80, and recommends it do pass, and also recommends that it be referred to the Finance Committee. The report was signed by Mr. Miles, Chairman, concurred in by Miles, Osterbach, Fuller, Jaroff, Cotton, Carney, Chatterton, and Halford. Sponsor substitute for House Bill 800 has no further referral.
House Bill 800 does have a fiscal note, be referred to the Finance Committee.
The Committee on Judiciary has had House Bill 981, advisory vote by the qualified voters of the state on enactment of a law asserting the right of the state to own and control public land in the state, under consideration. A majority of the committee reports it back with individual recommendations and a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Mr. Parr, Chairman, signing DuPass, Phillips, Anderson, Parr, and Malone. Signing no recommendation, Brown, O'Connell, and Buchholz. Signing do not pass, Martin and Barnes. House Bill 981 has no further referral. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of citations and resolutions?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, and reference of House bills.
House Bill 1029 by the Finance Committee by request, an act relating to investment of surplus funds in the State Treasury and providing for an effective date.
Finance.
House Bill 1030 by the Rules Committee, an act relating to assistance to nonprofit hospitals and providing for an effective date.
Hess and Finance.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Brings us down to the calendar. Representative Carney.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There will be a Democratic caucus on a motion to recess.
Representative Branson.
Mr. Speaker, there will be a Republican caucus.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House recess for the purpose of party caucuses to the call of the chair.
There's no objection. The House is in recess to call the chair for purpose of party caucuses. There's no objection, or revert to messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, the Senate has passed committee substitute for House Bill number 578 amended, establishing the municipal grant account effective date with the following amendment. Senate committee substitute for House Bill 578 amended Senate relating to state grants effective date, and it is transmitted for consideration. I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
The members should review House Bill number 578 because it does relate to the capital budget and the ongoing dispute between the legislature and the administration about what the authority of the legislature is to make grants. And this is a House bill, and the House already passed it. But we may want to expedite this bill because of its interrelationship with the capital budget. Representative Hayes.
It's being printed.
There's no objection. We'll revert back to the calendar. Will the chief clerk please read the first item on today's calendar?
House Bill number 605 by Miller and Duncan, an act authorizing municipalities to participate in the program of supplementary employee benefits and providing for an effective date. The Committee on State Affairs has had House Bill 605 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 605 and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Miller, Chairman, concurred in by Fuller, Parker, Gardner, Eliason, Miller, and Metcalf. Having no recommendation, Martin. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 605 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with a State Affairs Committee substitute for House Bill 605 and recommends that it do pass and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by Mr. Freeman, Vice Chairman, concurred in by Freeman, Duncan, McKinnon, Smith, Haugen, Guy, and Schaefer. Rogers has no recommendation. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for House Bill number 605 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
If there's no objection, committee substitute for House Bill number 605 will be adopted. Are there amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for House Bill number 605 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There's no objection, committee substitute for House Bill number 605 be engrossed, advanced to third reading, placed on final passage.
Committee substitute for House Bill number 605 by the State Affairs Committee, an act relating to participation in the state program of supplemental employee benefits and providing for an effective date.
Is there debate? Representative Hayes.
Mr. Speaker, can we get an explanation from the sponsor?
Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, this bill is a no-cost bill as far as the state's concerned. It's funded entirely out of program receipts. What it would allow the any municipality who, like the state, has pulled out of Social Security, would allow that municipality to piggyback on the state program of supplemental employee benefits and have the same options with their otherwise Social Security money that the state employees now have. But as I say, it's purely a piggyback operation. There's no fiscal impact on the state at all because the participating municipalities would have to pick up the cost.
Representative Hayes.
Mr. Speaker, I guess the question I have in my mind, since I didn't support opting out of the Social Security program, is whether this is, as I understood the explanation, that's not the issue. It's those who already have are being accommodated. It is a separate issue. I'd just like to get that explained.
Representative Miller.
Yeah. Mr. Speaker, it is a separate issue. There are several municipalities who have either opted out or, for that matter, I believe at least one has never been in the Social Security program. They would be able to, as I say, piggyback off the state. If anybody in the future opts out, that same option would be available to them. But it really doesn't have anything to do with the Social Security opt-in or opt-out. It's just for those that have opted out, they can piggyback off the state plan.
Representative Munson.
Mr. Speaker, through you to the last speaker, would this also include nonprofit corporations that opt out of the Social Security?
Representative Miller.
I don't believe so, Mr. Speaker. I think it's we're purely talking about municipalities. It's the first time the question has been asked, so I don't have a ready answer. But no, we're just using the word municipalities throughout here. In order to become a participating employer, the employer must file a request to the commissioner. The request may be made only after adoption of a resolution of the legislative body of a municipality, et cetera, et cetera. So.
Representative Phillips.
Through you, Mr. Speaker. I have here a fiscal note for about $150,000 plus two full-time positions. Unless this is an outdated fiscal note, seems to me there's some cost involved in this.
Representative Miller.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, I didn't say there wouldn't be costs. I said there'd be no cost to the state to allow the municipalities to bail on. They'll have, just as the present plan of participation in the supplemental employee benefits, just as the administrative costs of administering that plan are paid for by by the public employees and the involved, so in this case, if somebody else opts in and decides to piggyback off the state, obviously there's going to be some additional costs involved, but the public employees, in this case municipal employees, and their municipal employers will have to pay the additional cost for them to opt in. It's not a free program, it's just that it will cost the state nothing.
Is there further debate? Representative Martin.
Thank you, the Speaker. I'd like to give a few sentences of my concern here. Basically, what I think we're doing in this state and around the country is that we're making a major division between the private citizen and the citizen that works for government. The Congress passed a law some time ago that allows government entities to pull out of the Social Security program, which in their own justification might be right, and certainly nonprofit organizations are allowed to do this too. But on the other hand, private citizens with their employment cannot do this. And so more and more what we're seeing is, as far as the Social Security program is concerned, is the private citizen, the private worker, is going to have to share a larger burden of making that thing successful. And we all know it's not going to be successful. That's the reason government agencies are pulling out of it. But more specifically to this bill and to Alaska residents, what they might consider, and certainly legislators here, is that I think here again we're interfering with private enterprise, with the normal bidding practices and the competition that goes on to make a better package and a cheaper package for those that want a certain service or buy a certain product. Now, the municipalities, as well as nonprofit organizations that cop out of the Social Security, can go and seek bids from providers of services and get a good package for themselves. But it is obvious that if they were going to join a larger group like the state workers, chances are they might get a better package, or chances are we might end up with another Social Security program that is peculiar to Alaska only. So this is why I object to it, that a certain segment of our population is really being favored over another segment, public workers as versus private workers. And it's the private workers, again, that's going to pay the burden both ways, both for Social Security on a national level and out of their taxes, where even, we don't call it repealed taxes now, but at least a larger part of our financial resources are going to the public worker. And I think that we're imbalancing this situation all the time. So I had to oppose this mainly for those two reasons, but primarily, I guess, is because that we're going to develop a monopoly situation where one bidder, whoever is the provider and wins the package for state pension services and benefit services, is going to knock out all the other providers of services.
Is there further debate? Question for the House is the final passage of committee substitute House Bill number 605. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their votes? Clerk may take final roll.
35 yeas, 2 nays.
House Bill 605 has passed the House. There is an effective date clause. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent that the roll call and the passage of committee substitute for House Bill 605 be considered as a roll call for the effective date clause.
There is no objection. The roll call and final passage will be shown as the roll call on the two effective date clauses. Representative Rogers. Will clerk please read the next item on the calendar?
House Bill number 687 by Gardner, Rogers, Branson, Anderson, Barnes, Bettisworth, Brown, Carney, Chatterton, Cotton, Eliason, Halford, Hayes, McKinnon, Malone, Martin, Meekins, Metcalf, Miles, Miller, Moss, Munson, Parker, Phillips, and Smith. An act establishing the Alaska Energy Center and providing for an effective date. The Committee on Resources has had House Bill 687 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 687 and recommends that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Miles, Chairman, concurred in by Miles, Fuller, Osterbach, Chatterton, and Cotton. Having no recommendation, Halford and Carney. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 687 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with the Resources Committee substitute for House Bill 687 and recommends it do pass and attaches two fiscal notes. The report was signed by Mr. Freeman, Vice Chairman, concurred in by Freeman, Schaefer, Rogers, McKinnon, Smith, Meekins, and Duncan. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for House Bill number 687 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
There's no objection. The Resources Committee substitute will be adopted in lieu of the original bill. Are there amendments?
Not on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for House Bill number 687 be considered engrossed, advance to third reading, and placed on final pass.
There's no objection. Committee substitute for House Bill number 687 will be engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage. Clerk, please read the bill in third reading.
Committee substitute for House Bill number 687 by the Resources Committee. An act establishing the Alaska Energy Center, amending the Science and Technology Act and adding fiscal provisions relating to appropriations for the work of the Alaska Energy Center and providing for an effective date.
Representative Miles.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There's a lot of talk that comes out of Juneau, many cases about the economic situation, creation of jobs, and what have you. I think this bill, which takes a major step forward toward resolving some of those problems, is a classic example of what the legislature should be doing. It's some real straight talk that generates positive effects directly into the economic situation of the state, as well as to the research and development situation of the state. We're creating, with this legislation, Alaska Energy Center. And if members would like to know the heart of what it's all about, they can look at page 2, line 8, and the heart of it is the creation of jobs. Additionally, Mr. Speaker, the center proposes to return to the state, as well as to the nation, some of the benefits of the resource wealth that we have, we've been blessed with up here, through any number of right now really unknown research and development issues and potentialities that we have. It's a bill that's been worked on very great detail by the Resources Committee. In the Finance Committee, he's got 24 sponsors. I could go through a section-by-section analysis. Be happy to do that if anybody would like me to. Generally speaking, it creates a center. Most of the bill is technical as to how that center would operate. But if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, we've had a slight technical problem on the fiscal notes. The fiscal note was supposed to be printed in House Journal Supplement number 56, and there are two fiscal notes, one's for $46,000 and one's for $10 million. And what happened was the $46,000 fiscal note got printed twice, and the $10 million fiscal note has not been printed in the journal. It will be in today's journal supplement, and I'd be glad to answer any questions, or if people would like an at-ease, we could print up some copies of the larger fiscal note.
Representative Hayes. Will the House please stand at ease? The House please come back to order. House please come back to order. Representative Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The staff is still sorting out the confusion on the fiscal note. You're going to have, in addition to the $46,000 fiscal note for Department of Administration, a three-page fiscal note for the Energy Center. The first page has the numbers, and the second two pages will have the backup. That'll be coming around as I talk about it. The intent on this, of course, is that we take some of our natural resource wealth and plow it back towards developing new energy technologies. And energy technologies that not only will benefit the people of Alaska, but the people of the other states and nations as well. And perhaps we can use this, among other things, to convince those in the lower 48 that we are doing good things with our wealth and that they don't have to take it away. Now, we start out in the first year. The first year is the center's coming online, and the second page of the fiscal note, which you'll be receiving in just a minute, shows the phasing in by the four quarters of fiscal year 1981. Fiscal year 1982 is the first year of full operations with an estimated 50 positions, primarily in senior staff, professional staff, and technical staff. The FY82 is full funding. Now, we're assuming that the center will be able to attract substantial federal funds, even in the first year. The federal government is putting large amounts of money into energy R&D. They are looking for state programs that they can use as the vehicles for that R&D. You'll notice in this FY82, we're projecting a 22% increase in the federal funding. Beginning in FY83, the percentage of state funding starts to decline. And in FY84, you see the first actual reduction in state funding. The intent is that the Energy Center will become self-sufficient through, firstly, the royalties and sale of patented items developed by the center, secondly, through attracting private and federal funds. And the percentage of state funding is 100% for FY81 and 82. Then it declines to 95%, 75%, 60%. And if we continued this out, you'd see a decline to 45, 30, 15, and 5. The intent then is that the Energy Center not receive a continuing state appropriation. The larger items, first of all, contractual, would be for contracted R&D, which would be done in various parts of the state, depending on where the energy source you're looking at is. Under grants and claims, that is subcontracts to the University of Alaska, their ongoing alternative energy research program. And page 3 of the fiscal note, and if the Xerox machine will finish, you'll get a list of that, shows the programs that are underway in the alternative energy research program there. In preparing this bill, we looked through other agencies of the state government, including the Division of Energy and Power Development, the Power Authority, the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, and so on, found quite a number of energy R&D or demonstration projects. And the intent, we've asked the governor in the next year's budget to include all energy R&D projects in the Energy Center budget. And the Energy Center thus would be the state entity for development and demonstration projects. And so, in fact, FY82 and 83, in terms of new state money, is smaller than the number you see here, because we will be eliminating the funding for all the other items in other agencies, and you will see a reduction in those other agencies. In addition, under the University of Alaska programs, anything that is not research will be transferred over to the Energy Center in the coming fiscal years. I think probably the best thing now would be to ask if there are any questions on the fiscal note. I'd be glad to answer anything people have.
Representative Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Sponsor. First, I'd like to ask if it's possible to be withdrawn as a co-sponsor of this bill. The thing has gotten way, way out of hand from what we expected. It was a nice dream at the beginning of the year to say what we could look into, and I had anticipated that perhaps our universities under their normal research programs could fulfill the wishes of the original sponsors here, but this has gotten way out of hand. When I think of some of the major inventions within our nation today that we've capitalized on for the last 200 years, like old Ben Franklin and supposedly discovered electricity, and didn't cost us a cent. And Tom Edison did a few things that helped, Alexander Graham Bell, and I don't know of any of them that takes so much money. And I don't know what we're going to get, even with the elaborate explanation from the gentleman from Fairbanks, for the $1 million in vision here. It doesn't talk about some of the other major things that we talked about in caucus, and our good friend from Petersburg was addressing. What are we doing about our prime sources of energy? Maybe the gentleman from Fairbanks could give us a little understanding. Is there going to be any work on that, or are we talking strictly about alternative energy?
Representative Martin, are you requesting your name be removed as co-sponsor?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
There's no objection. Representative Martin's name will be removed as co-sponsor.
Thank you,
Representative
Mr.
Rogers.
Yes. On everyone's desk this morning was a letter of intent that House Resources prepared. And I would point out the page 3 lists the four basic areas of R&D that the center will be getting into. Firstly is fossil fuel recovery. Secondly, renewable energy and transportation. Thirdly, energy conservation and building design. And fourth, the Innovation Center. Now, the Innovation Center, I think, is one of the most important parts. It's modeled after similar programs at the Montana Energy Research and Development Institute, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and a number of other major private and public R&D institutes. And the basic purpose there is to assist small businesses and entrepreneurs in their development of technologies. And I know I'm most familiar with the Montana model, and they've had quite a major impact on economic development in the several state region around Montana. And talking with some of the businesses, people are quite pleased with the efforts of that. So in the fossil fuel recovery area, I think that's one that should be pointed out. We're receiving 95% of our funds this year from Prudhoe Bay, and I think most people know that we're not expecting to recover even half of the energy that's in the Prudhoe Bay Reservoir. And the thought here is that the Energy Center would probably joint venture with the industry in developing methods of oil recovery that could enhance the recovery from Prudhoe Bay and make sure that we squeeze every last drop out. In renewable energy, you'll be looking at development of new technologies in hydro, small hydro, solar, wind, tidal, what have you. And I think that it's important that we do take some of our resource wealth and try to ensure that we're going to have continued resource wealth.
There further debate. Question for the House is the final passage of committee substitute for House Bill number 687. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their votes? Clerk may take the final roll.
24 yeas, 10 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill number 687 has passed the House. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, lacking 27 votes, I move the effective date clause.
Motion for the House, motion to adopt the effective date clause. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their votes? Clerk may take the final roll.
30 yeas, 4 nays.
Effective date clause has been adopted. Representative Miles.
Mr. Speaker, I'd move and ask unanimous consent that we adopt the House Resources Committee letter of intent on House Bill 687.
What page of the journal is that in?
It was just received.
Mr. Speaker, it isn't in the journal, yet it's on all members' desk.
If there's the motion for the body is the motion to adopt the Resources Committee letter of intent. Is there a debate?
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've had a chance to scan the letter of intent, but not to read it thoroughly. I presume the letter of intent is appropriate, but the question I have on the letter of intent, or the motion on the letter of intent, is how it relates to the recommended level of funding. Because although I'm in favor of the legislation establishing the center, I have reservations about the appropriateness of the level of funding in the first year startup of this center. So what I'm asking is, by adopting the letter of intent, is that tantamount to adopting the fiscal note? Because I think that fiscal note deserves additional consideration.
Representative Miles.
Mr. Speaker, I think the fiscal note and the letter of intent are not necessarily one and the same. The letter of intent merely tries to give some direction to this new nine-member board as to what specifically the legislature has intended, and the fiscal obligations, fiscal note, a different matter.
Speaker, I have no objection to the motion.
There's no further objection. The Resources Committee letter of intent for House Bill 687 will be adopted. The House, please stand east. Will the House please stand at ease? Will the House please come back to order? Will the Chief Clerk please read the next item on the calendar?
House Bill number 880 by Miller, an act relating to post-retirement pension adjustments in the teacher's retirement system and providing for an effective date. The Committee on State Affairs has had House Bill 880 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 880 and recommends it do pass and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by Mr. Miller, Chairman, concurred in by Miller, Martin, Lassen, Parker, Gardner, and Fuller, having no recommendation, Metcalf. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 880 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 880 Finance and recommends it do pass and attaches a new fiscal note. The report was signed by Mr. Freeman, Vice Chairman, concurred in by McKinnon, Rogers, Guy, Schaefer, Smith, and Freeman. I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent that Finance Committee substitute for House Bill number 880 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
If there's no objection, Finance Committee substitute will be adopted in lieu of the original bill. Clerk, please read the First Amendment.
Amendment number 1 by Mr. Miller. Page 1, lines 18, 19, and 20. Delete all language after the word living and insert since the date of retirement or. Page 2, lines 10, 11, and 12. Delete all language after the word living and insert 1 since the date of retirement or.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I ask unanimous consent to the adoption of the amendment.
There is objection. Representative Miller.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, this is a technical amendment that was suggested by the Division of Retirement Benefits, and it's it's conceptually the same as they presented to the Finance Committee and that the Finance Committee adopted. However, someplace in the drafting process, the something slipped and it didn't get made quite this way. If we don't say since the date of retirement, the people in the retirement division don't know what month to start computing the retirement. For instance, if you talk about the year of retirement as the language would have unamended, if somebody retired in let's say in May of 1979, it's not clear whether the 4% so-called ad hoc post-retirement pension adjustments should be made from the first of the fiscal year or the first of the calendar year, or indeed from the retirement date of the individual. So this amendment just makes it very clear that that the starting point for these benefits would be on the date that the employee retired, and if they retired in the middle of the year, exactly in the middle of the year, they would get then 50% of the benefit. If they retired at the very beginning of that particular year, they'd get 100% or any other fraction that's involved.
Representative Guy. The clerk, please reread the amendment.
Amendment number one by Mr. Miller. Page one, lines 18, 19, and 20. Delete all language after the word living and insert since the date of retirement or.
Representative Miller.
Page two, lines 10, 11, and 12. Delete all language after the word living and insert one since the date of retirement or.
Representative Miller.
It could probably help if I read that in context. Starting in line 16, it said the amount of the increase in benefit payments may not exceed the greater of the increase in the cost of living since the date of retirement or, and then goes on with the 4% language down below.
Representative Brown.
Trapped in my chair here. Speaker, maybe the proponent of the amendment said this, I don't know, but I can't tell the difference between the amendment and the language that's in the bill. It seems to have the same effect or nearly the same effect. Maybe that's what he said.
Representative Miller.
The intent is exactly the same as what's in the bill. But the language was suggested by the Division of Retirement Benefits because without the word date of retirement in there, they don't know whether you mean the year of retirement, and if so, does that mean the first day of the year or the first day of the fiscal year or indeed the date of retirement, which might be February 15th or April 19th or whatever. So,
is there further debate on the amendment? Representative Hayes? Is there a further objection to the amendment? There's no further objection. Amendment number one is adopted. Are there further amendments?
Not on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for House Bill number 880 amended be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There's no objection. House Bill 880 is amended, will be engrossed, advanced, third reading, placed on final passage. Will the clerk please read the bill in third reading?
Committee substitute for House Bill number 880, Finance, amended by the Finance Committee. An act relating to post-retirement pension adjustments in the teachers' and public employees' retirement systems and providing for an effective date.
Representative Miller.
Just a very, very brief announcement, explanation. This bill doesn't affect very many people, but of course to the people that it does affect, it's terribly important. At the present time, if a person goes on a disability retirement, perhaps due to a severe illness or something like that and can't work any longer, that person is eligible for these purely permissive, optional 4% post-retirement retirement adjustments that the present law allows the state to promulgate from time to time. In other words, the disability retiree has the same PRPA, same 4% cost of living, that's the maximum adjustment as a regular retiree. But because of a quirk in the way the law is written at the present time, once that disabled employee reaches retirement age and goes off disability retirement and instead goes on normal retirement, all of a sudden, because of the way the law is written, all of the previously accumulated cost of living adjustments are wiped out, and he has to start out at ground zero again, you know, as if the cost of living hadn't risen for him the last few years, whatever it might be. So the people who are affected, and I say it's only a handful, certainly agree it's unfair. As a matter of fact, the Division of Retirement Benefits also agrees that it's grossly unfair, and they support this legislation. But the way it's written right now, they can't, by regulation, remedy the situation. We've got to pass the law that says that whatever PRPA ad hoc cost of living raises were granted to a person when they were on retirement disability continues with them after they leave retirement disability and go on to normal retirement.
There further debate. Question for the House is the final passage of committee substitute House Bill 880. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their votes? Representative Metcalf. Are there other members? Clerk may take final roll.
32 yeas, no nays.
House Bill 880 has passed the House. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent that the roll call on the passage of committee substitute for House Bill number 880 amended be considered as a roll call for the effective date clause.
There's no objection. The roll call and final passage will be shown as a roll call on the effective date clause. Clerk, please read the next item.
House Concurrent Resolution number 35 by Moss and Rogers relating to a study of a rail line from Fairbanks to the Ladue Valley. The Committee on State Affairs has had House Concurrent Resolution 35 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Concurrent Resolution 35 and recommends it do pass, and further recommends it be referred to the Finance Committee. The report was signed by Mr. Miller, Chairman, concurred in by Miller, Gardner, Fuller, Parker, Eliason, Metcalf, and Martin. The Committee on Finance has had House Concurrent Resolution 35 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with the State Affairs Committee substitute for House Concurrent Resolution 35 and recommends it do pass and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by Mr. Freeman, Vice Chairman, concurred by Freeman, Schaefer, Guy, McKinnon, Smith, and Rogers. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that State Affairs Committee substitute for House Concurrent Resolution number 35 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
If there's no objection, the State Affairs Committee substitute will be adopted in lieu of the original resolution. Are there amendments?
Not on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
The House Concurrent Resolution 35 is before the House in final passage. Is there a debate? Representative Hayes?
I just have a question, Mr. Speaker. Maybe the sponsor could tell us where the Ladue Valley is. I assume it must be the
Representative Moss.
Thought I wasn't going to get a chance to talk about Buffalo and railroads. You know, I've had a symbol on my desk here most of the time, and another one here has been added to the train. The purpose of this bill is it's almost self-explanatory in the fact that the first reading of it, as you see it, means the introduction of another mode of transportation down through the Delta area into new mineral areas. And the question that the previous speaker asked me, I think, is pretty well explained in the bill there. And I would like to see those trains going down that rail and using the Anchorage port itself as part of its point where it's going to discharge part of its cargo. I don't know whether that answers the previous speaker's question or not, but that's about all I feel like saying right now.
This is not clear to the border. Ladue Valley's past Delta ways.
Or Ladue Valley runs into Canada, and it heads for the 40-mile country, and it also heads in towards our mineral deposits up in that area there.
Question for the House is the final passage of committee substitute for House Concurrent Resolution Number 35. Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I just wanted to ask, what is that train going to do to that poor animal over there?
Representative Moss.
Mr. Speaker, we have special catchers that we intend to place on the front of the thing to keep it from hurting it. I don't want to hurt the chips, so I can send them up to Mr. Brown by the way of the new railroad.
Question for the House, the final passage, committee substitute, House Concurrent Resolution Number 35. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their votes? Clerk may take final roll.
32 yeas, no nays.
House Concurrent Resolution 35 has passed the House. Clerk, please read the next item on the calendar.
Senate Joint Resolution Number 68 by the Commerce Committee by request, relating to proposed federal budget cuts and appropriations to the United States Postal Service and reduction in the federal cost of living allowance. The Committee on State Affairs has had Senate Joint Resolution 68 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Miller, Chairman, concurred in by Miller, Parker, Fuller, Martin, and Eliason. Metcalf has no recommendation. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent that Senate Joint Resolution Number 68 be considered in gross advance of third reading and placed on final passage.
If there's no objection, Senate Joint Resolution Number 68 will be in gross advance of third reading and placed on final passage. Clerk, please read the resolution third reading.
Senate Joint Resolution Number 68 by the Commerce Committee by request, relating to proposed federal budget cuts and appropriations to the United States Postal Service and reduction in the federal cost of living allowance.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, could the clerk in engrossing correct that error in line 24? It's affect and not effect.
There further debate. Representative Byrne.
Mr. Speaker, just to comment on this bill, I'd like to remind the body that a vote for this resolution would be a vote for continuing federal inflation. On page 1, line 25, we talk about the concept of attacking inflation through cuts in the Postal Service and the cost of living allowance place a particularly heavy burden on postal employees when compared to other employees. I don't know that that's true at all, any particular reason for it. And I think we're in the same boat on this bill as we are on a number of others that request the federal government to spend money. The federal government's bankrupt, has been for quite a while, and if we vote for this, we're going to ask for continuing inflation and national economic problems.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, I'm really a little surprised that no one has proposed an amendment to just take this money we're going to spend and just get that money we're going to spend by abolishing BLM or Department of Interior.
Is there further debate? Question for the House, final passage of Senate Joint Resolution Number 68. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their votes? Clerk may take the final roll.
28 yeas, 6 nays.
Senate Joint Resolution Number 68 has passed the House. Completes today's calendar, brings us to unfinished business. Will House please stand at ease? Resources Committee. So be referred to the Rules Committee. Are there other items of unfinished business? Representative Miles.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. With the concurrence of the Commerce Chairman, I'd like to waive referral of House Bill 919
and would expect you to refer it to Commerce Committee. It's an act relating to the survey and improvement of public land. That, although it has land in the title, has more to do with the surveying and matters of commerce that would be more rightly fall under its purview.
Referral on House Bill 919 will be changed from a resources referral to a commerce referral. Are there other items of unfinished business? Representative Carney.
Mr. Speaker, we'll have Democratic Caucus on the motion of adjournment.
Be a motion to recess. Representative Branson.
Yes, there'll be a Republican caucus on recess.
One announcement, we will, when we eventually adjourn today, we will be adjourning until 1 p.m. on Monday. There will not be any committee meetings on after today. So will not be any committee meetings this weekend. Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I understand your violent and strict orders also include Monday morning, and for that reason, when the Commerce schedule comes out, it will show our first meeting probably either Tuesday evening or Monday night or Tuesday morning, and we hope that'll be available later today. And also, Mr. Speaker, if we're able to, depending on how the caucuses go, we're going to try to have the Commerce Committee meet at 4:30 this afternoon. We've got to deal with that garbage, fellas.
Mr. Speaker, would the majority like to share with the minority the reason for this extended weekend? Are we just going to walk around and guess between now and Monday afternoon? We're not objecting, but it'd be a good idea to just somebody why we're going to do it.
The reason we're taking the weekend off is we're going to act like normal people and take the weekend off instead of working till everybody can't stand each other. And I think at this point, getting to the point where we're losing ground instead of gaining ground, because it takes us 2 hours to debate a 10-minute bill, and the same things are happening in committee. I think everybody needs a little rest, and then they can come back on Monday afternoon, and we can wrap up our work and adjourn in a timely manner. I think the rate we're going, we need it. Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to respectfully suggest we have a short calendar Monday so the Judiciary Committee can meet on Monday afternoon after we get out.
We will be having a calendar on Monday at 1 o'clock. Representative O'Connell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Since we'll be fresher on Monday, I would like to serve notice of reconsideration of House Bill 687.
Representative O'Connell's notice of reconsideration is noted. Representative Anderson.
Brief at ease, please.
House, please stand at ease. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House recess to the call of the chair. The purpose of the recess is for
party
caucuses.
There's no objection to the House to recess the call of the chair for the purpose of party caucuses.
Monday afternoon.